This is Line One, your health connection, a weekly program produced at the studios of KSKA. Each week, KSKA's host, Dr. Thad Woodard, puts you in touch with local and national experts in a variety of health and family issues. Opinions expressed are those of the host, guest, and callers and do not represent those of KSKA, the licensee, or the underwriters. Here's your host, Dr. Thad Woodard.
Good afternoon. Welcome once again to Line One, your health connection. And I have to say something that we think is very important around here. This is the last time I'm going to be doing this only for South Central Alaska. Next time you hear us, which will be in September 14th, we're going to be going statewide for the first time. It's kind of interesting for us. And so things will change a little bit. Phone numbers, email addresses. So if you're a frequent listener, you may want to pay attention the next time you hear us on the air. Before I introduce today's guest and our topic, which is really the topic is the effects of alcohol on the developing fetus, and we'll use some other names for things that are associated with that shortly. But before we get into that, I want to make two short comments. One, I haven't used the term quackwatch.com in a while. It sounds kind of funny, but it's an excellent source for information about different kinds of healthcare issues, researched very well by a physician named Stephen Barrett, who is a retired psychiatrist. He has a number of other networks that he opens under various reasons, and he's added another one to their network called insurancereformwatch.org. The purpose of this website is to deal with misinformation being circulated by those individuals who appear to be opponents of health care reform. So he's trying to get more accurate information. We'll talk to Kristen, our engineer, see if we can't get that link to our website, but it's www.insurancereformwatch, all one word, .org. Second thing to comment on is we have a whole lot of people in the United States right now who've never seen measles, are not aware of measles. We've been, I think, finally getting through the issue of concern about autism and measles vaccine and thimerosal. But it was a big issue also in the United Kingdom, and such a big issue that a large percentage of the population over there have not been immunized. And as would be predicted, as we understand measles outbreaks now, they are paying the price. They're having an increased amount of measles infections. There was 1,370 cases last year, the highest number since 1995. 80% of the cases were in unvaccinated children. We want to remind everybody that it's an extremely dangerous illness to get. Before the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine was introduced in England, 86,000 children caught measles, 16 died. So it's not something to take mildly. Anytime you do or consider a vaccine or a treatment of any sort, as we've said a number of times, you have to consider the risk of doing it and the risk of not doing it. The risk of the vaccine is very, 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 very small compared to the risk of these natural illnesses, which unfortunately have been shown over and over again when we drop our guard with immunizations and keeping a large group of people immunized to protect what we call herd immunity. When that drops, the diseases often, such as measles, recur, which is, I think, exactly what's happening in the United Kingdom right now. So with school starting, the need to get immunized, just a little bit more emphasis to go out and get the job done, although I don't think we're nearly at greater risk in the United States as they have been in England and Great Britain. So as I said, we're talking today about the effects of alcohol on the developing fetus. My guests today are Marilyn Pierce Bolger. Marilyn's been involved with fetal alcohol for a while now, and she has worked in the past with the state of Alaska's diagnostic team, and she's also developing a private sector diagnostic team with an organization called Assets. Also with me in the studio is Sherry Scott. She's with the Fetal Alcohol Syndrome Family Support Group at the Stone Soup Group. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
It's great to have you both here. I'm boring. I like to start with the basics. Somebody give me some statistics. Why should we be concerned about fetal alcohol?
Alaska has the highest known rate for fetal alcohol syndrome in the country. Approximately one out of every 163 births here in Alaska, a child is affected with the diagnosis of FAS, although that may not be made for a number of years after that child's birth. And that's individuals who just have the diagnosis, the full diagnosis of FAS. Another, say, 10 times that number, about 1,600. So that would be about 1,600 children per year, or 160 children per year in the state of Alaska who may be impacted by FAS, the full diagnosis. 10 times that number then are potentially impacted by the full scope FASD, which is a spectrum disorder. It's a all-encompassing term, not unlike autism and autism spectrum disorders. In other words, the diagnostic categories have a medical diagnosis. You have to have specific things in order to get the medical diagnosis. With the spectrum disorders, there may be softer signs or things that are more hidden disabilities that may not be full-blown.
Yeah, the way I think of it, in biological systems, there are bell-shaped curves.
Right.
So there's right in the middle is every most people.
Yep.
Yeah. One side is the side where they got fetal alcohol syndrome. That's easy. You got most of the criteria. Then on the other tail, where there's less people, are the, I wonder.
Exactly. And we have a lot of us that are in the I wonder category.
Especially when we don't have clear-cut diagnostic categories or tests and so forth. Diabetes, we can put a line in the sand. Right. Fetal alcohol, asthma, some illnesses, that some of them very common. It's much harder to be absolutely sure.
Yeah, and frequently it's very difficult to get the maternal alcohol history, which is a whole other story. If you're working with an individual, say, who is a young adult or an adult or even a child sometimes, you may not be able to get that prenatal alcohol history. And you can't. It's very difficult to make that diagnosis without it.
Sherry, do you want to flesh out these diagnostic categories again that Marilyn's mentioned? You know, we've talked about fetal alcohol syndrome, spectrum disorder. Mm-hmm. There's something called fetal alcohol effects. What clarify what all this means?
Well, about 3 years ago, maybe four now, an international group got together to try to come up with kind of a worldwide agreed on label for what was going on when somebody had prenatal alcohol exposure. And they came up with the term fetal alcohol spectrum disorders, like my colleague mentioned, similar to autism spectrum disorders and the bell curve. We're looking at people from very severe end with lots of alcohol exposure to somebody that might never be diagnosed, never see a diagnostic team, and functions just perfectly fine in the community. So the idea is that we need to be looking for folks that start to have some sort of issue and then make sure that appropriate supports are put in place. And that's why we went from the old term, the fetal alcohol syndrome, for the people with the severe physical features and growth retardation, to fetal alcohol effect, the folks that may have central nervous system damage but don't have any facial features or growth retardation.
And that terminology is actually really not in use at this point. That you'll see that on charts, and individuals may carry that as a diagnosis, FAE. But currently you'll see other things such as static encephalopathy or
alcohol
neurodevelopmental disorder. There's some other.
Yeah, and what, as a physician, what I'm saying is we know what's going on. We don't know why it's there.
Right.
We're defining, we're describing it. Mm-hmm. But sometimes we'll never know. Like you said, we can't get the appropriate
history.
We sometimes are seeing a child who's a foster care.
Right.
We don't. The mother's not around. We don't have the mother even if we want to talk to them. And we may not get reliable history anyway.
Right.
So we can't define it. And there are no specific tests in this particular static encephalopathy or developmental disorder that are going to answer that question after the fact. We're seeing the results of an injury to a developing fetus. Without any evidence of what's what caused those effects.
Yeah, it's interesting that you see a lot of impacts to the brain that are similar to somebody that's had a traumatic brain injury, or in some cases like shaken baby. But because it happened prenatally, we don't consider it a traumatic brain injury or an acquired brain injury. It's just it's part of the organic makeup of that brain. So we have brains that come to us already kind of readjusted, so to speak, and with many issues that are similar to somebody with a TBI. And it goes on through life. This isn't something that's cured or that you can give a drug for at this point. And and heal somebody from having that kind of damaged brain.
But that said, there are accommodations that if you
exactly.
understand sort of how this exposure has had an impact on a brain, you in that particular individual, because the genetics of every individual and the dosing and timing of the alcohol exposure is going to make a difference in terms of how that manifests.
That's why we go back to this broader descriptive labeling now instead mm-hmm. of just FAS, FAE. The terms that are being used now more clearly define where that person's challenges and deficits are.
Right.
Let me just take a brief second to remind our listeners you're listening to Line 1. Our topic today is the effects of alcohol on the developing fetus, the consequences of that, what can be done. If you've got questions or comments, there's a couple of ways to get in touch with us. Until just before 3 o'clock today, there's also the program rebroadcast tonight by tape at 8 to 9, but we won't be here. So if you want to ask any questions, you got about a little less than an hour to call either 550-8433 if you're local. That's 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752, and you can email at line1, L-I-N-E-O-N-E, at kska.org. Another problem is with any environmental effect on the developing nervous system, it may not be that particular substance alone. The issue of fetal alcohol is often blurred and confused even more by other substances, marijuana,
right.
heroin,
meth.
Smoking, meth.
Yeah. The difference, though, I think, is that those substances are not teratogens. They don't kill cells. So alcohol has, it's on a list of a relatively few things out there in terms of drugs that actually halt the cellular development or kill cells. And so those things the drugs you're mentioning may have an impact on neurobiochemical pathways, but they haven't altered the structure of the brain in the same way alcohol would have.
I think the exception would be some new research that's starting to come out on methamphetamines. And there have been just a couple of studies done looking at fetuses that have been prenatally exposed to meth and seeing some wiring changes and smaller brain size in meth exposure. But again, the thing comes up of polysubstance
right.
use.
Right.
And when I've worked with birth moms in the past that have said, well, heroin's my drug of choice. And it's like, but, or I use crack. Quite often, as you talk more with them, you say, well, you know, when you're partying, you know, what did you drink? Say, well, beer or wine or whatever, wine coolers, because it has fruit juice in it. It's better for me. You know, I'm pregnant, I know.
I think that brings up a good point, is alcohol not being perceived as a drug.
Yeah.
And, in fact, it is. And also that varying, you know, things are not alcohol. I only drank beer. I mean, I'm a women's health professional and see women on a regular basis who've come to me for pregnancy-related care. And over again, I have women who will come in and say, I stopped as soon as I learned I was pregnant. But that may be, you know, quite some time after that yeah. pregnancy initiated, and so there could potentially still be some impact.
Why is that important? Why is it important that they realize that could be too late? What's happening?
Fetal embryological development starts day one.
Right.
You know, that cellular
right.
division begins as soon as uh-huh. that sperm and that egg get together.
So you got two cells that are
that's
go to
right.
four cells.
That's
that
right.
Go to 16.
They are multiplying.
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
they are, and alcohol, because it's a teratogen, it's going to interfere with that multiplication mm-hmm. process or rearrange it, or there's gaps.
And by age three, and a little thing that somebody sent mm-hmm. to me here, I think it's very important that early it's just a clump of cells, but by age three you can see form, and by 8 weeks it's clear there's a human being.
That's
I mean,
right.
so
That's
the
right.
cells have not only multiplied exponentially, they began to have their own mechanism by which they're forming
right.
things.
Right.
And if you can see from the outside, it looks like a baby. The inside looks like a brain.
And
a heart.
Exactly. The other piece of that people are really amazed about, I think, is that in order to have an FAS, full spectrum FAS diagnosis, you have to have the face, which we can talk about in a few minutes. But you don't get the face. You're not going to have those facial features unless that alcohol exposure occurred roughly between day 19 to 21 or in the third week of mm-hmm. pregnancy, mm-hmm. well, many women don't realize they're pregnant at that point. Mm-hmm. And I think we've done a beautiful job of letting people know don't drink when you're pregnant. I think that message is out there. But I think we need to really start focusing on if you could get pregnant, are you consuming alcohol and would you potentially be exposing a developing fetus?
Yeah, I think NIAAA is now saying for both men and women, if you're planning to conceive, stop drinking alcohol 6 months yeah. prior to trying to conceive. That said, there's also research that says somewhere like 45% of pregnancies are planned. I think that's probably a high number, but,
we've talked about that in this program before, is roughly almost 50% of all pregnancy in the United States are unintended.
Yeah, right.
Okay?
Yeah.
Right. So it brings up another opportunity, and I don't want to get into that, but I think the message has not been directed appropriately.
Okay.
And the other question I get is the one that nobody's got the right answer for other than the politically correct one, is how much alcohol is safe?
Okay.
Yeah, right? And so the correct answer is none because?
We don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. We don't have that information.
But we do know that specific right. times during pregnancy, like that window, 17 to 21 days where the mid-face mm-hmm. is forming mm-hmm. and 21 to 23 days, I think, the mm-hmm. clefting can occur at a 2 to 3 times higher rate mm-hmm. for women that are binge drinking.
Mm-hmm.
So that's different than somebody having a glass of wine every evening. I'm not saying that's an okay thing while you're mm-hmm. pregnant. But binge drinking has been shown in research to be much more devastating to the fetus just because of the quantity of alcohol, the ratio of alcohol.
Yeah.
And for a woman that would be, I think they're saying now one episode, 4 drinks in 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You think about people drinking on the weekends.
And something you told me that kind of maybe just crystallized for the first time with me, I don't know if I ever heard it the same way, is so if a woman were to binge drink very early, there may be an effect on the nervous system without an effect on the face.
That's right.
So
yeah.
that then it becomes even harder to make a precise diagnosis because the facial characteristics, which are so important to making the diagnosis, are only going to be affected during a limited period of time. 18 to 21 weeks, you said, right?
21 days.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Huh. All right.
So that's why you only have roughly 10% of individuals who have the face who've
right.
been impacted by prenatal alcohol exposure.
Right.
And the other 90% have the more hidden disability, i.e. the brain changes mm-hmm. that then manifest themselves or physical changes mm-hmm. also.
Yeah, it isn't just the face that's impacted, but there's
right.
a lot of just because of the way fetal development happens, if that there's alcohol exposure at significant levels in the early couple of weeks,
mm-hmm.
Any kind of midline organism or organ that's developing can have an impact. And we're talking top of the head to the bottom of the toes.
So when we say midline, we're talking about right through the middle of your body, face, your
right.
heart,
sinuses,
your
clefting of the lip and palate,
vision,
teeth,
hearing.
Yeah. All down to the digestive and reproductive organs, everything.
Right.
You're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on KSKA. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard.
The recorded rebroadcast of today's Line 1 Your Health Connection with Dr. Thad Woodard will repeat tonight at 8, and an archived copy will be available online at kska.org following today's live broadcast. KSKA is supported by listeners like you and Providence Alaska Medical Center. Stroke is an emergency. Providence Alaska Medical Center is committed to increasing awareness of the symptoms of a stroke. If you or anyone you know has sudden weakness on one side of your body, sudden confusion, trouble speaking or understanding, sudden trouble seeing, walking, or loss of balance, or sudden severe headache without cause, call 911 and get to the hospital within 1 hour. Information at providence.org/Alaska. This message is sponsored by Providence Alaska Medical Center. This is KSKA Anchorage.
This is Line 1, Your Health Connection. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard. Today we're talking about the effects of fetal alcohol on a developing fetus. My guests are Sherry Scott of The Stone Soup Group, and Marilyn Pierce Bulger, a family nurse practitioner who has been, both of which have been very instrumental in helping develop teams both in the public and private sectors to help diagnose and offer services for individuals, children, particularly with the fetal alcohol syndrome. If you've got questions or comments about this disorder, a couple of ways to get in touch with us before 3 o'clock today, 550-8433 is our local number, 550-8433. Toll free, 1-888-353-5752. And emailing at lineone@kska.org. How about breast milk? How much of a concern is alcohol and breastfeeding? Can you cause fetal alcohol syndrome by breastfeeding?
No, because the alcohol's teratogenic effect only happens when the fetus is and baby is inside mom. However, that said, alcohol certainly does go through breast milk and get into an infant, so we don't recommend breastfeeding women use alcohol. It has many other impacts on the baby. It can be sedating. It can there's an increased risk of SIDS. There's some other sorts of issues related to breastfeeding and alcohol. But no, it will not cause an FASD.
How about the question of a mother who has been affected by fetal alcohol and their risk of transmitting that to their offspring? Is that a possibility?
Yes, not in the way that you think of it. If you have and I had many clients like this. I've dealt with clients like this. It's a young adult or an adult who has the prenatal alcohol exposure themselves. They, because of some brain changes and some impulse control and other sorts of susceptibilities to perhaps using alcohol themselves and not understanding consequences related to that, they then expose their own infant or fetus to that unintentionally. So I have seen multi-generational family members who have had FASD, but it's not a genetic sort of condition in that if you have FASD, you will then have a child with one. Genetics does play a role in that if you're drinking alcohol, your genetic makeup and that of your fetus will have an influence in how that alcohol is processed in your system.
You know, Marilyn, you brought up the, impulsivity, lack of thinking of consequences.
Right.
And I think another thing that gets left out of the picture a lot is the partner's role in this. And when we do trainings quite often, somebody says, well, what about dads? Can a dad that drinks cause fetal alcohol syndrome or spectrum disorders? And again, the answer is no. But the big contribution the partner has, male or female partner, is to be sober themselves throughout the pregnancy and support the woman to stay sober so that she, especially for a birth mom that may have prenatal exposure herself and is easily led by her peers, having people around her, not just her partner, but friends, family that aren't drinking, that helps a lot.
Right.
You know, Sherry, your comment is apropos of a call, I think. Vicki, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Yes, it's exactly apropos of the comment. My question was whether or not the male sperm is affected by drinking, because earlier in the program, it was said that both male and female are discouraged from discontinuing alcohol use up to six months prior to, the possibility of conception. But then I had another question.
Whoa. This is a good one. I think it may be better than you think. Just hit me. I mean, we know this is a teratogen.
Right.
All right. And so now we got a sperm who's rapidly reproducing. Okay. So what's the answer to this question?
As far as we know, it doesn't cause FASD, but it can. Heavy alcohol exposure in the male can, in fact, influence his sperm counts, his sperm
motility,
and other sorts of things. So it is a contributor to infertility, for example, in both the male and the female. But it doesn't cause FASD,
as far as our research has
shown at this point.
Yeah, and it's probably fairly easy to rule that out. But I just was also thinking, if a man is also drinking heavily, does that affect their sperm in a way that may then lead to his offspring having problems? And as far as we know, the answer is no to that.
Yeah. Well, actually, there has been a little research done on that that shows, I think it was in second graders, and this is probably 15 years ago. So I'm hoping there's more research done in the men's part of this. But a IQ decrease of like 7 points, an increase in hyperactivity.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, you've got environmental factors.
Very, very,
and
very, very tough to do the really good research to answer these questions.
Exactly. So, and we're certainly not going to experiment with folks.
All right, Vicki, we're coming back. We're coming back to you.
Circling the horses.
Sorry, what else can we try to answer for you?
My other question was with regard to the facial features. You're talking about it, but what are those facial features?
Ah, good question.
Okay. Good question.
And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right, thanks for your call.
Thank you, Vicki.
So we didn't get to that, huh?
No, we didn't. We didn't clarify that. There's some very characteristic features. There tend to be very small eye openings and fairly close to each other. The classic mid-face, again, this is going to be mid-face features largely. There may be a very shallow or no groove. You know, there's a vertical groove between the nose and the upper lip that on most of us will have some definition or some curvature there, and that may be very flat, and the upper lip may be particularly thin. Now, having said that, and ear placement may be slightly, I think it's lower, correct? So having said that, though, I don't want people in the audience walking around looking at people with thin upper lips thinking that they all have FASD, because they may not. You know, there's also some genetics involved with regard to facial features and what we look like. We tend to look like our mom or our dad, and if we've inherited that, we've gotten that.
So that gets into what we've talked about before, sensitivity and specificity. The specificity of a thin upper lip is not good for fetal alcohol. The sensitivity of being present in the diagnosis is good.
Right.
And the philtrum, that area above our lips, is, again, same thing. It's you're putting things together, although certain total facial characteristics really, I'm guessing, will get you to thinking about this pretty hard.
Yes, exactly.
And I think the reason that it's so important to be looking at those facial measurements is that what you see happening on the outside is a reflection of what's going on in the brain behind that face.
Maybe, depending on when it happened again, right? So,
again,
I mean,
it's like
if you've
see
got
a child,
the face between 18 and 21 days, there's a lot of nervous system development that may not have been exposed prior to this, just to be clear and cogent about it.
But it is one of those things that triggers you to do more assessment on the central nervous system. And that's why fetal alcohol syndrome includes those facial characteristics. Those were the markers that actually started people thinking, gee, is there something going on when women are drinking while they're pregnant?
Okay, so the facial characteristics, and we've talked a lot about neurologic characteristics. Let's ferret those out. What are we talking about? What are the common things that might be expected or are commonly associated with fetal alcohol syndrome?
The brain is such a complicated structure. You know, in terms of when the alcohol exposure happened, you're likely to see cerebellar damage, frontal lobe damage, midline structural damage. In other words, I'm going to explain it.
Okay.
I'm not going to leave you with that. The cerebellum is the back part of the brain that controls our things like balance and coordination. So somebody who's had a significant fetal alcohol exposure may have some difficulty with, you know, sports and other sorts of things. They may have some trouble with balance and coordination. The midline structure that we're talking about, and again, because the brain, we form from the middle out, the right and left brain may not be communicating with each other. So you tend to have certain functions on one side of the brain that are not communicating with the other side. The frontal cortex, the front part of the brain, is the part of us that helps us do planning and organizational skills and other things like that. Mm-hmm. We also see some damage that may be represented in terms of individuals not reading social cues real well. And again, that's partly this back and forth communication. They may be very good at mimicking social behaviors, and they come across as being able to talk the talk. but they don't read, they can't interpret the subtleties of social communication. So individuals who have FASD or FAS are often the outcasts in their peer groups. They may have difficulty forming peer relationships.
We can't forget the hippocampus.
Oh, yeah, of course, of course.
We've got problems with the hippocampus, and in fact, when they're doing MRIs, they find that the left side, even in as compared to controls, the left side is smaller in folks with an FAS diagnosis versus an FASD diagnosis. And that's the area that helps us with our spatial memory, kind of knowing how to get around in space, remembering how to do things like ride a bike, hand-eye coordination, our verbal learning. So, mm-hmm. And that's one of the biggest challenges we see with folks that have not just FAS but FASD. The educators tend to teach by speaking, and that's really probably the least effective way. And I don't want to overgeneralize, but for the majority of people that have been diagnosed, verbal learning is not where it's at for them. They really need a much more multiple modality approach to learn things.
Like we said with the facial characteristics, I think it bears repeating in that the neurologic constellation is not specific.
Right.
To fetal alcohol. We've described a relatively common child, particularly early in school, mm-hmm. that is struggling academically with attention, memory, language, of which one cause might be
alcohol.
Mm-hmm. Is that
yes,
fair to
absolutely.
Say?
Yes, absolutely. That's fair to say.
So we want to keep focusing on the difficulty of this and the multifactorial component of mm-hmm. it. And I say that just because of... Well, a lot of parents want to know the answer. A lot of people may have guilt about what happened to their children, and da, 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 and we're not at a point where that's easy. So other specific issues that are part of this disorder that we need to talk about?
Well, I think we've hit on kind of the primary issues that are organically based, but what research is showing, and particularly out of the University of Washington, Dr. Ann Streisguth did a lot of work with the individuals that have been diagnosed through their diagnostic network, following them for years and years. And what they were seeing is that there were some really common secondary disabilities that evolved with folks if they didn't get an early diagnosis, didn't have supports in place, and in fact, if they didn't have a diagnosis of fetal alcohol syndrome. So if they weren't severely impacted, they tended to have more long-term disabilities, things like trouble in school, in trouble with the law, depression, using substances themselves, a higher rate of suicide attempt and being successful. And they all kind of, not all of them, but they go back to those organic issues, the impulsivity, the lack of thinking about consequences, poor memory of how you do things, the not being able to actually walk the walk kind of thing, not reading social cues. Some of it goes back to those actual physical changes that happen, like in the eye and in the structures in the eye and in the way the brain perceives vision and with hearing, so that they may be getting garbled messages to start. It makes it difficult for them to learn, makes it difficult for them to pick up the cues from people's body language.
And your point was, when we started, was that the people, the individuals who may not be diagnosed earlier at higher risk of social academic
secondary
problems later.
Yeah.
And what's the point there? Why would that be? Because they didn't get the early intervention,
right.
And because what may appear to be milder at the beginning doesn't necessarily mean that they don't have risk?
Mm-hmm. Right.
In fact, the 90% that Marilyn talked about earlier, those folks that don't have any outside indicators to say there's something different about the way this person functions in the world, those are the folks that get misdiagnosed as ADHD, possibly as having autism spectrum disorders, as having depression, as having bipolar disorder, oppositional conduct disorder. You can go through the DSM and find a whole bunch of descriptors that these kids may come to a FAS diagnostic team already carrying 7 or 8 diagnoses in some cases. But nobody has ever asked the question, do you think their brain might have been changed before they were even born by alcohol exposure?
All right. We have an email message. I want to get to that. I also want to remind everybody you're listening to Line 1. And if you have questions or comments, 550-8433 is our local number up until just before 3 o'clock today. 550-8433 is the local number. Toll free, 1-888-353-5752. And email at line1, L-I-N-E-O-N-E, at kska.org. Okay, so the email, can you discuss how people who do show facial features are not necessarily less cognitively capable than those who do not show? Did I read that right? People who do show facial features are not necessarily less cognitively capable than those who do not. I've worked with several children who show facial characteristics whose function on a higher level than those who do not. Children without facial features are often misdiagnosed as ADD, conduct disorder, ODD, oppositional defiant disorder, or even autism, which is the point you were just making to some degree. If you don't have the facial characteristics and you have some of these other diagnoses, then that still, apparently we have evidence to suggest that still may be the cause for those diagnostic categories.
Yeah. Yes.
So,
do we have an idea of what percentage of those diagnoses may be related to fetal alcohol effects? Again, very difficult research, very difficult to structure a study, I would think, that answers that question. I'm just curious.
I also I think in part because prenatal alcohol exposure questions may not be asked, or the person responding to that information may not know, may not have it, you know, if this is a child in the child protection system or some other places. So it's very difficult to get that. But I also think your emailer was kind of trying to get at that having the full diagnosis isn't necessarily somebody who's more cognitively, that person may not be more cognitively impaired than somebody with the hidden diagnosis, and that is true.
Right. And again, the reason for that depends on when the insult happened.
Exactly.
And if it was throughout the pregnancy, that's different than an episodic binge drinker, which is important to understand.
Because as more and more brain research is being done, we know that, you know, brains are changing for years, you know, so not just in utero, but there are different parts of the development that happen in utero, certainly at different months of pregnancy, but then they're changing for years after that.
So and there's no reason, just to show you how complicated, there's no reason that a person who has fetal alcohol may not also have attentional deficit disorder or some other psychiatric risk genetically,
I mean, I think the other thing that I've heard from some of the diagnostic teams have talked about, the clinicians working with these individuals have said that, let's say somebody has attention deficit, and they're treating it because they think it's simply attention deficit, and they don't have the full picture with regard to what may be the causative etiology for this. Those individuals, that drug that they use may not be the best suited drug for them. I think individuals with FASD who have medications used for their attention deficit issues maybe benefit from certain drugs rather than others. Is that not correct, Sherry?
Yeah, I think so.
Having the full information about what all might be contributing to this behavioral issue, I think, really benefits an individual. The other point I want to make related to brain function is that many of the individuals with FAS or FASD have IQs that are relatively normal. You know, they do not have an MRR, mental retardation level IQ. And that's important to remember because these individuals are relatively smart. They just have different processing capabilities with their brain.
And that brings up some of those other issues around the secondary disabilities. Somebody that has a higher IQ but still has some challenges with social situations or managing their money is aware of it. They tend to feel worse about it. They may become isolated, or they may be angry at other people. They don't know how to manage those kind of issues so well.
Let's take our final break. I think this is a good place to do it. You're listening to Line 1, your health connection on KSKA. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard.
You're listening to Line 1 on KSKA Anchorage. Tonight's edition of Line 1, Your Health Connection at 8 p.m., is recorded and is not accepting phone calls. Support for Line 1 comes from the Lake Otis Pharmacy. Walk in or drive through for medical equipment, support hose, and supplements. On Lake Otis, one block north of Tudor, the pharmacy with a wheelchair on the sign. Children given positive attention and experiences during their early years are more likely to become smart, productive members of society. High-quality early education translates into higher graduation rates, better job readiness, and less crime and welfare dependence. So when you support a young child, you're supporting the economy. For more on early learning, visit bestbeginningsalaska.org. Early learning, it's everybody's business. This message comes to you from KSKA and Best Beginnings.
This is Line 1. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. Today we're talking about the effects of alcohol on the developing fetus and the subsequent human that comes out of that. And so if you've got questions or comments, here's how you can get a hold of us. We'll be here until shortly before 3, and we'll be more than happy to answer questions if we can. 550-8433 is our local number, 550-8433, toll-free, 1-888-353-5752, and you can email at line1, L-I-N-E-O-N-E, at KSKA.org. One thing that almost doesn't need to be said, but sometimes how you say things makes it seem more important. In my statistics I've got down here, fetal alcohol spectrum disorders are the leading known preventable cause of mental retardation and birth defects.
That's true. Given that, however, though, I mean, when you have to understand that many of these individuals don't have mental retardation. It's just that as causes of mental retardation, this is way up there. Yeah. And it's very preventable. That's what's so difficult about alcohol. We're very schizophrenic in our larger culture about how we treat alcohol. We use it for celebration, for, you know, a number of things. It's a socially acceptable sort of thing to do. And yet it is a drug, and it does have impacts, and we simply need to be responsible about that.
I often wait till the end for the keynote question, but comments. But it seems like to me the keynote comments are, you know, you really don't want to be drinking if you anticipate getting pregnant.
And even if you're not anticipating getting pregnant, that my message to women is, if you aren't using some form of preventing pregnancy,
right,
and you're drinking, then you're potentially exposing your fetus.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's
so
this
the second side of
yeah.
things is you also can prevent pregnancy and
yes,
if you want
yes,
to.
Yes, right. Yes. And we have way more options than we had 30 years ago. You know, there are more and more choices. And I do see women using more long-term methods that have less side effects for them. You know, so as a women's health clinician who's been doing this for a lot of years, I'm happy to say that more women are finding things that are good for them.
All right, here's an email along the same line, I guess. Occasionally on the morning TV shows. Now, there is a very important source of good health information. the topic will be pregnancy. Alcohol is sometimes mentioned, and I've heard the past guest MDs, it doesn't say healthcare, but it says MDs, that's me, say that alcohol should be minimized, but never have I heard them say limit it totally during pregnancy. What is your opinion of this, and what does Alaska research tell us about this matter? So kind of what we've been talking about there.
The state of Alaska did an opinion survey of a variety of health providers back we talked to pediatricians. They surveyed pediatricians, social workers, obstetrician, gynecologists. I'm forgetting who all the groups were, but the folks who flunked the question the most in terms of how, you know, is it okay to have some alcohol while you're pregnant were the OBGYNs.
Mm-hmm.
And there were something like 57% of them, I believe, who said, it's okay. Right. Now, I've talked to some of my OBGYN colleagues to say, so why do you do that?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reason is there's in our medical training, we are trained to fix things. And if you have a woman who presents who's coming in, say she's 2 months pregnant, and she's already had her alcohol exposure, maybe it wasn't a lot, it was some, people don't, my colleagues do not want women to feel bad because there's nothing they can do about it at that point.
Right.
So unfortunately, women are then getting the message that, well, maybe that's okay. Mm-hmm. The way I've turned that around as a women's health clinician is I'm being honest with women by saying, I don't know if that alcohol exposure did something. There may not be anything that's very overt. We may not see facial features. We may not see something. But depending on the dose and timing, yes, maybe this your child would have an impact, and here's things to be looking for as this kid gets into preschool and school age that might be behaviors that would be associated with this. So just keep an eye out. Yeah.
Just to kind of nail down or drill in on this a little bit more, if you are an honest scientist and you're really, really good in the environmental effects of things, and I forget the right term exactly, I've read quantity is an extremely important amount. If you give somebody enough water, you can make them sick. So, but if you're a public health advocate, then and we don't know the minimum, then the message has to be. So again, we're not talking semantics. We're talking about ethical thinking and trying to be as critical as we can. And when you get down to it, the correct answer is we don't know.
Right.
And so if we don't know, you want to avoid it if you possibly
if you can.
Right?
Right? Absolutely.
Okay. Couple of questions. Let's go ahead and take a phone call. We've got Mike. You're on line one.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call, doctor. I would like to know about some physical symptoms of, say, 4 and 5 year old children, and one in particular is walking flat footed. Oftentimes, not flat footed, but on the tippy toes.
Tiptoes. Yeah.
Yeah, is that a symptom of oftentimes, along with many others, of fetal alcohol spectrum disorder? I'll just take the answer off the air. I'm driving, so.
Sure, Mike. Thanks for your call.
All right. Thank you.
Comments?
I don't believe that walking on tiptoes has been identified as an indicator for FASD. Kids do tend, and again, we kind of generalize as we're talking about this. Low tone tends to be more of an issue than high tone, and so you wouldn't see a lot of tippy toe walking. I know that's one of the things that people sometimes use as an indicator for, you know, question autism. But again, it's one thing in a constellation of things that you look at. Tippy toe walking by itself, you know, that it doesn't mean anything other than somebody might have some pretty tight Achilles tendons after a while.
Yeah, I would have to say as a pediatrician, I think anytime we see tiptoeing, the possibility of neurologic problems comes across, but most of the time it's behavioral and doesn't mean anything. But there are a number of other disorders, neuromuscular, that could potentially relate to that. So we can't answer that specifically. Another email, does anything you're talking about today relate to marijuana during pregnancy? So the question is, I suspect here is, what about marijuana? We'll just leave it at marijuana.
Well, we know marijuana is associated with intellectual and developmental delays, potentially hyperactivity and attention, some sleep problems, and excessive crying behaviors, but not the, it doesn't have the teratogenic effect that we're talking about or the actual cellular level death or changes.
Yeah.
Many things a woman might do during pregnancy may have an effect, but the significant issue regarding alcohol here is this term we're calling teratogenic, which means it is changing cells.
Right.
And that's different than maybe affecting an enzyme level or something that may be almost impossible to even say anything's happened.
Yeah.
So it's got the mechanism of action here is potentially much greater for alcohol than for marijuana, as we currently understand things.
Yeah.
That's fair to say.
That's correct.
All right. Let's see. We got another phone call. Let's take Jane, I guess it is. I'm sorry. What can we do for you?
Oh, good afternoon. I have an 18-year-old daughter who is exposed to alcohol before birth, and she does need assistance with everyday living skills. And she's now that she's finished high school, and I was just wondering, are there agencies available for young adults? And I'll take your answer off the air.
Yeah, great question. So this question, in my mind, put it in perspective, is going on down the line. Now we're through school age and into children who are now young adults and may still need some help. What's available?
Well, one of the options, if your child was eligible for special education, the Anchorage School District has extended school time that's available for youth that qualify and under the Individuals with Disability Education Act. If your child qualifies, they can continue to get a free public education through their 21st year. So that might be something you would want to explore. We did that with my adopted son, who has multiple disabilities related to his prenatal alcohol exposure. And he just graduated at 22 from the ACT program here in Anchorage. It gave us an extra 4 years to work on his independent living skills, his self-help skills, learning how to navigate around the community, call for Anchor Ride, that, and work on his social skills, too, which I've got to say are still kind of lacking. but, I mean, that's going to be a lifelong issue for him, which it is for many people with FASD. Unfortunately, our systems don't keep up with it, and the really downside of the answer is the biggest support system for adults that experience fetal alcohol spectrum disorders is our adult correction system. That's how we support people. And it really is something that needs a huge amount of work in our, not just Alaska, but around the world. We don't tend to support people that don't physically look impaired. If they just don't fit in, they do the same crime over and over again. We still don't ask the question, could there be something else going on here?
In terms of international work, at least, I believe it's either Alberta or British Columbia, has made some strides in recognizing individuals who may be impacted by prenatal alcohol exposure. And they're actually getting them into a criminal justice sort of setting that is more supportive as opposed to having them be in the general prison population. So there is some work being done internationally, mm-hmm. but nothing here in the U.S.
Yeah. I'd like to mention a pilot project that my organization is involved with at Stone Soup Group, and it's a job development program for youth with an FASD. They technically don't even need to have a diagnosis, but if you believe that's what's going on, we have collaborated with Nine Star to help those youth get their GED if they don't have one, and then provide whatever kind of support they need to get a job, with the focus really on being looking at a career development instead of, you know, intermittent fast food jobs.
Why don't we just take a second? What else does Stone Soup do? I meant to ask at the very beginning so that people are aware of the Stone Soup Group, so perhaps you might want to expand on that for a second.
Well, we're a private nonprofit. We provide a wide range of supports and resource materials to families raising kids with special needs of all kinds all over Alaska. And depending on what the grant source is, it may be a very focused project. We work with at-risk families in Mountain View in one of those projects. We also are the Parent Training Information Center, providing training and support information around special education for the state of Alaska. We have the FASD Family Support Project that does that kind of training and support to families and service providers that are connected to kids with FASD and adults in some way. And a couple of cool projects that are related to working with youth with autism spectrum disorders as well. A social skills group, bi-weekly Wii game groups that really work very well on helping develop peer relationships and social skills. So we're trying to do it as naturally as possible.
Another organization that is similar to yours that does similar kinds of help is the Alaska Youth for Family Network.
Youth and Family Network. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, they tend to work with families who have children that have behavioral health issues. The long-term goal is to try to keep children from being placed in out-of-home residential treatment programs, either in or out of state, provide the necessary support to the families and the youth themselves to help them deal with the issues still staying in their home or in their home community. If not, if they aren't if a family isn't able to keep their youth at home, then Alaska Youth and Family Network also works with them to, at the time that the child is discharged back into the community, to make sure that everybody knows what they need to know to support the youth.
We had a listener call in with a link or email in with a link to a 2003 survey on fetal alcohol knowledge, attitudes, beliefs, and behaviors done by the state. And our alert engineer, Kristen, has already put that up on our website, ksk.org/line1. If you'd like to get more information about some knowledge, attitudes, beliefs, and behaviors that Alaskans have about this disorder. We've only got about 5 minutes left. It's been a fast hour. Are there any particular issues that we haven't addressed yet one of you would like to talk about? And otherwise, I'm going to keep moving in my list.
Can I bring up what's happening in September?
Sure.
Every September, on September 9th, there's an international activity that goes on. It's Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Awareness Day. Mm-hmm. And we are doing a variety of things in Alaska. Juneau has some things going on. You can connect with them through search, searhc.org, I believe. Yep. Stone Soup Group and the Anchorage Council and FASD, we have a brand new website that is going to be activated, but people can access that through the Stone Soup Group website at this point, because I forgot what the, what the address is. But we have one of our favorite activities. Over the years, we've had children that experience FASD and their families and service providers paint and create stick figures to represent all of the people that have been diagnosed with FASD in Alaska in the last 9 years. And that at this point, we have 1,121 stick people, and there's more now. Those people will all be installed on the lawn on 36th Avenue at the Lusac Library at 9-9. We're going to start at 6, though. So it takes a long time to get that many stick people in the ground. And then we've got this other very cool thing that Marilyn mentioned earlier, our new diagnostic team that's getting up and running. You want to talk about that?
Sure. The state has, I believe, 10 active diagnostic teams around the state, many of whom have been functioning for quite a number of years. But in Anchorage, we really just have one team at South Central Foundation, which largely serves, only serves Native family members and Native individuals. Being the largest village in the state, we felt that we really needed to work towards getting a diagnostic team that could provide services to non-Native individuals. We found an agency, Assets Incorporated, has agreed to house our coordination role, and we're looking for healthcare providers who are interested in being involved with this work. In order to make a diagnosis, which we haven't really said, it does require a multidisciplinary team. I can't just go into my pediatrician's office and get that diagnosis. In order to get a good diagnosis, you need the evaluation of a psychologist, a physical or occupational therapist, a speech-language therapist, a medical provider, which could be either a nurse practitioner or physician. And in our case, because of state requirements, we really insist on having a parent navigation person to help the family through that diagnostic process.
So, all right. Yes or no? We still underestimate the number of individuals with fetal alcohol effects.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay, thanks to today's guests, Marilyn Pierce-Bolger and Sherry Scott. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks
for inviting us.
Won't be here next week, but September 14th, we'll be back on our new statewide broadcast. So why don't you join us? You'll learn some more. Program will be with Ted Mala and Lisa Dolchek of South Central Foundation. We'll be talking about the role of nutrition, both in traditional Native healing and in Western medicine. So tune into your health and learn more Monday, September 14th at 2 p.m., repeating the same evening at 8 p.m. on FM 91.1. For KSKA and for Line 1, this is Dr. Thad Woodard. Have a great day.
This has been Line 1, your health connection. If you have questions or comments concerning this program, write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508, or email us at line1@kska.org. Additional information on today's show topic, including relevant website links, will be posted along with audio of today's program on our website at kska.org/line1. CD copies of this program can be purchased by calling 550-8400 during regular business hours. This is KSKA, Anchorage.